If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, reporting from Rome this time. I am making my way across Europe between these two weddings that I have, living my best life, I might say. But I also have to make some time for work and for podcasting because that's how I make money. So I am all caught up on my shows. Thank you to whoever suggested to me ExpressVPN because that has been saving my life. I can still stream Peacock over here. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to. So yeah, I'm all caught up. And so today will be a solo episode with my thoughts on the latest from The Valley, Real Housewives of Atlanta, and the Summer House Reunion Part 1. Also, before we get to that, we got the House of Villains Season 3 cast. It's funny because I feel like for the first two seasons of House of Villains, like I get really excited about the cast and I watch the first episode or two and then I kind of fall off of it. I don't know why. I think it's more like I'm interested in sort of the experimentation of getting all these people under one roof, but I know that season two was apparently really good. I just never got to watching it. I think it was also on during a kind of crowded time for reality TV viewers. But this cast people are really excited about. I'll just run through it really quickly. We have Paul Abrahamian from Big Brother, Tyson, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, Apostle from Survivor and The Challenge, Kate Chastain, obviously from Bravo, Below Deck, The Traitors, Jackie Christie from Basketball Wives, Drita DeVonzo from Mob Wives, who I never really watched Mob Wives in a big way, but I'm obviously familiar with her via memes and things, and she's obviously iconic. And Drita is the one that people seem to be the most excited about. Like, people are really excited to have her back on TV. So I think that's kind of getting people amped for this show. Plain Jane from RuPaul's Drag Race, Johnny Middlebrooks from Love Island and The Challenge, Ashley Mitchell from The Challenge, Christine Quinn from Selling Sunset, which love having Christine back on TV. That is really important. And Tom Sandoval, from obviously Vanderpump Rules and The Traitors, he stays booked and busy, which is really interesting. So I don't think he can complain about, you know, I'm tired of the complaints that Ariana's getting all the opportunity out of this because he's also gotten a fair amount of reality TV opportunity from Scandoval. So I think this can officially put that conversation to bed. And lastly, making her third appearance on House of Villains in three seasons, Tiffany New York Pollard, the icon, the legend of reality TV from Flavor of Love and I Love New York. It's funny, they just keep bringing her back on the show. She's basically a permanent cast member. Brian Moreland responded to me posting about the cast yesterday, saying that they should just make her host this time instead of Joel McHale, which, like, I would co-sign that pretty much. But I kind of love that she just stays employed via House of Villains. Like, that makes me very happy. So yeah, that's the House of Villains cast. It's apparently coming early 2026 to Peacock. Reminder that this used to be an E! Show, but the press release that I got said that it was Peacock announcing it. So it sounds like it might be making its way over as a Peacock show instead for season three. And then also, I'm going to be doing a mailbag episode for Tuesday's episode. So make sure that you are following the show on Instagram and TikTok at Gab Me With Gabe. You could submit your questions via DM on Instagram. I'll post a couple of prompts on Twitter and Threads and Blue Sky if you'd rather do it there. But yeah, reminder to be following us on Instagram and TikTok because that's where I post clips and memes and things like that. Go to youtube.com/@gabbingwithgabe to see some full length episodes of our show. Give us a nice little review if you feel so inclined. Check out our merch, which is selling like hotcakes, I'm told, from my network, Herdat. We have stuff with slogans like hating reality TV doesn't make you deep. The smartest people you know watch Bravo. Bravo is my sports. I want to gab. The catchphrase of Gabbing with Gib on t-shirts, sweatshirts, trucker hats, and mugs. So the link for those is in my show notes. I just don't want to do a couple plugs up top before we get into it. So let's start with the Valley. This week's episode started with a scene between Jasmine and Melissa where Jasmine basically like detailing why she still feels so triggered by the Danny thing and her drinking a lot and how they, Nia and Danny basically ignored her the morning after that big blow up in Santa Barbara. And she just like can't find herself getting over it, which I think like to me just shows me that it's authentic, her reaction. Like she just feels deeply like it's off-putting for her. Like she feels uneasy about it and she wants to have another like sit down with Danny about it, which I think is totally valid. Like she's clearly following her own feelings about it, and I totally respect that, and she has every right to do that because he did something to her. He grabbed her ass and was an overstepped. So, you know, I think that she has every right to speak up. We also find out they're picking up Zach from the airport after visiting his boyfriend, and he says that they are officially boyfriends after this trip despite the boyfriend being married. I wonder if we'll get him officially on the show or not, if he'll come to LA during filming, but that's exciting for Zach, especially I think, like, you know, Jasmine's getting some time with Melissa on the show, and Jasmine and Zach were kind of like, you know, sidekicks last season. Like that's sort of how they were treated because they were sort of like their partners weren't featured. I think that was a big reason why. And so I'm glad that they're both getting some time to talk about that and their partners and their relationships this season. You know, Nia and Michelle meet up with their daughters, and Nia, I appreciated that Nia, it didn't feel like she was downplaying too much sort of Jasmine's experience with Danny, and she, you know, was expressing hope that they would talk it out at some point. Like it was a pretty classy response from her, I would say, in this scene. So I appreciated that from her. And we got a funny little detail from Michelle where Isabella is down for Michelle to marry Aaron, but she wants Jesse there, which is a funny request from their daughter. And Michelle's like, we'll see when we get there. One of the bigger scenes of the episode was Danny, Jason, and Luke meeting up for hamburgers. And Danny continues to downplay his drinking, downplay what he did to Jasmine. And Jason is really speaking up for Jasmine. In this scene, he says he took a swig from the tequila bottle on Watch What Happens Live. He said he took 3 swigs. Janet says he was chugging from it. It's probably more like the 3 swigs thing, I would guess. But we are getting different stories at every different turn. You know, we got this unseen footage of Jason in the hot tub sort of downplaying the whole incident after that big dinner in Santa Barbara. And he was like to Danny, like, it's not a big deal. But now he is coming for Danny and making it a big deal. And Danny sees it as Jason was urged by Janet to say something to him, to confront him, because this is uncharacteristic of Jason to do this. And he says, you know, maybe there's something bigger going on. You know, in the after show, we find out that like this is uncharacteristic of Jason to do. Like this is not his normal way of approaching things. That's what Kristen says. Obviously, Jason and Janet deny that, you know, she pushed him to confront Danny. And I think 2 things can be true. I think this can be uncharacteristic of Jason, but everything they know about Jason is pre-reality TV, right? So like when cameras aren't there, yeah, he's not going to be confronting things in a big way. But like this is what you have to do when you're on a reality show. You have to push yourself to confront things and to speak things out loud and to have these confrontations because that's part of the gig. That's what these scenes call for. So I just think the you know, everyone's like jumping to the conclusion that Janet is pushing him to do this. And that's entirely possible that she pushed him to do this. Like I'm not denying that. But I also think that it's like, they're taking out his own agency, which I never like when that happens, like when people just assume that somebody's making somebody do something. You know, Danny says that he has dealt with shame and disappointment for a while for the Jasmine thing, which I believe, but also like you have not given her a proper apology where you've expressed understanding of why this affected her so deeply. And he says, I feel like there's a target on my back and it's making me question my friendship with Jason. And he also said that, you know, when he woke up after having missed dinner, he was mad. Like, he was mad that nobody woke him up for dinner, which I believe that, actually. Like, I believe that Neo was the one that sort of let him sleep to sleep it off, and he wouldn't have made that decision himself. But yeah, I don't know. Then we get this more self-shot footage of Jax in his treatment center, in tears, day 17 of treatment. He's like, I get to see Cruz tomorrow. I'm so excited. I feel so changed. I feel so much clarity. And I'm like, put a sock in it. Because the next scene, we see that Britney's mom, Sherry, queen, icon, legend, with that thick Southern accent that I just love hearing. It's amazing. She's there for a month to help her out, presumably for filming too, so that she can watch Cruz as Britney has to, you know, fulfill her obligations for filming and also be able to see her friends, all those things. So we find out that Jack's got 30 minutes with Cruz, and then he asks Britney to stay along later to come back to the park they met up at to talk with the therapist. And she says it doesn't go well at all. We just hear all these different things that just point to like that self-shot footage being total bullshit. Like, we find out that he's uncovered those cameras that he had taped cards to in their house, and he's watching Britney operate around their house and texting her from treatment, being like, I see you wearing those ripped jeans, and like talking about her outfits, and like he's watching her from the cameras that he uncovered before he went to rehab. Like, what a fucking creep. Like, that is fucking weird. I hated that detail. And she's like, focus on why you're there. And she's like, he's not learning anything. And she's right. Like, he is all about saying, I am changed. Dude, it's been 2 weeks. Like, you don't change your ways like that in 2 weeks. Like, he's saying one thing on camera and then acting completely differently to Britney. And it's so transparent. Like, it's not even like a question. Like, I completely believe everything Britney's saying. He's like, Jax is telling Britney that he wants to start fresh and he wants to start dating again. Then this is when we find out that he doesn't want to go back to the house, even though Britney had already signed a 3-month lease on her rental, and Jax has now signed a lease for a condo next to Tom Schwartz. So he went and signed this lease without checking with the mother of his child, who's living and taking care of his son, without checking with her what her living situation was, what his son's living situation was. He went and signed this lease without consulting her, completely out of spite, without thinking about anybody. And in the after show, they talk about how, like, I mean, Tom Schwartz, to his credit, brings up to Jax, like, you realize every time you hurt Britney, you're hurting your son. And Jax was like, I know, like, I totally regret it. But like, then the next thing out of his mouth is like something that shows that he hasn't changed and doesn't get it. And Britney's right. Like, she's like, he wants to go back to pre-Britney days where he can just party freely. And she made me laugh when she was like, I wish he was in jail without a phone. To get a phone, he would have had somebody who had to sneak it up their butthole to get it to him. Like, I love when she like goes like the more crass direction. It feels like the true, true, real Britney from probably her growing up days. And I loved seeing that. So I just love Britney. Like, she's like maintaining her stance. You know, like, she's not drifting back towards him. She's not being swayed. She's like, and so that to me just shows like she is dead set on this. She is showing strength. And I really, really love seeing that from her. Then we have Danny sit down with Jasmine and Melissa. I mean, right off the bat, it's like he orders an ice water instead of getting a beer at the brewery. Like, please be more obvious, like be more transparent. But yeah, I mean, like Jasmine explains it pretty well here. She's like, listen, like as a woman in relationship with a woman, like I constantly have to defend my relationship. Like, people are always like, make out, like prove that you're in a relationship. She just wants Danny to understand and acknowledge why his actions triggered that feeling in her and that experience in her, especially because they are friends. And so like for him to do that as her friend, like, is completely unself-aware and doesn't acknowledge her, you know, her experience in life. And even in this moment, like, I just am not convinced by Danny and that he understands this. I'm just not. He's like, I'm just sorry. Like, I'm sorry. He doesn't verbalize his understanding and acknowledgement. And like, he just says sorry again. And Jasmine's like, in her confessional, she's like, no, that's not what I want. I want Danny to show that he understands the way that I experience life, not just as a bisexual woman in a relationship with a woman, but as a Black woman too, as a Black queer woman. Like, that is a different experience in life from the straight cis white male. Like, I just don't think he's understanding that. I think he's trying to, you know, get past this issue as quickly as possible to not give any more light. But it's like, I don't think it's going to go away unless he really, really understands that and apologizes in like a really more, I don't know, in a way that just shows that he is thinking about Jasmine and not just himself and how it makes him look. You know what I mean? But he did acknowledge in his confessional that he did not put himself in her shoes. So maybe that shows some promise. But I just feel like in the scene, he wasn't giving what I want him to give. Kristen then meets up with Jesse and Luke. She's not mincing words about Jason. Let's just say that. She's like, he's in no space to judge anybody else's relationship because he needs to keep his wedding ring on. Apparently, Jasmine heard this rumor that when Jason goes out, he takes his wedding ring off. Everybody's been talking about it. There are no cheating rumors, but there is this rumor about the ring, apparently, allegedly. And Jesse in his confessional is like, this is stupid. Like, you know, I didn't wear it all the time. Like when I went to the gym or did these different things, I would forget to put it on. But I'm like, Jesse, like, you're divorced now. Like, I don't think that you're in any state to like say what's normal or not in a healthy relationship, especially when it pertains to like how you're presenting, like whether you're presenting as single or in a relationship while you're committed. He's right that like this is a bullshit rumor about Jason, but like he's not one to talk or he's not one to sort of pass a judgment call on this, I would say. And I think it's interesting that Luke even acknowledges that Kristen should not have brought it up. Like, and she's saying that she brought it up in defense of Nia and Danny because Jason and Janet are coming for them and those are her friends and she'll defend them at whatever cost. But like, I think it's interesting that Luke is even acknowledging, like, I don't think Kristen should have shouldn't have gone there. So let me get to Brittany's shark party. We have the whole crew is there, including Lala, Sheena, and Brock. And we have this hilarious moment where Michelle is telling Lala, like, Jesse called me a slut and a whore in Santa Barbara. And Lala's like, why does he look the way his personality is? And then the editors, God bless them, they're great on this show. As she's saying this, they show Jesse walking into the party. And it's like, it perfectly personifies what Lala is saying. Like, yeah, like, he does sort of carry himself in that sort of more douchey way that is his personality. And you can see it without even hearing him talk. I thought that was an amazing little cutaway moment. It was honestly really sweet that Jason was like genuinely torn up about confronting Danny. Like he sits Danny down and he's near tears, honestly. He's like basically his voice is cracking. He apologizes so quickly to Danny because he's just like such a, I believe that he's like a sweet soul. He's like, I just can't handle this. That wasn't me. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, I think that is, again, I don't think that means that Janet sent him to do this per se. It's a possibility. I think it's more like he is not, I mean, Jason wouldn't be on the show if it wasn't for Janet, right? So like he is not really made for reality TV. I think he's a good balance in this group and I'm glad he's there for sure. But this is not a natural environment for him and his personality. And I think that is more what this reflects in my opinion. Like he has to do these things. He has to say these things. He has to do these confrontations that are just not natural to his the way he goes about life. And I think he feels bad about that. And it's just funny how these two men like, you know, Danny accepts his apology. He's like, I love you, man. Like, I totally get it. He apologizes so quickly and then he accepts the apology so quickly. It's like the next day. It's just funny. Like, it's, he's like, I haven't been eating. I haven't been sleeping. And it's like, dude, it's been like maybe a day or two. I think it was funny. It was like a normal friendship squashing an issue versus a reality TV friendship squashing an issue, which is usually drawn out and drawn out and drawn out. So Lala confronts Jesse like a real friend. And he needed to hear it. I will say that he like completely does not give Lala the reaction that he knows she wants to get out of him. Because like this is her moment, right? Like she's at this pool party. She's filming. She's mic'd. She's there to confront Jesse on behalf of her friend Michelle. And, you know, based on her own experience with Randall, I guess. But like Jesse knows that. He recognizes that. And honestly, kudos to him for like not giving Lala what she wanted to get out of him. You know what I mean? I'm glad Lala confronted him and I'm glad she said these things. He says that calling Michelle a slut and whore was, you know, a moment of weakness, which is rich, but, you know, he doesn't give it to her. And in his confessional, he says, calling Michelle a lying, cheating whore was a moment of weakness. The truth is that she's a liar and a cheater, but she doesn't deserve to be called a whore. Unfortunately, that made me laugh. There are little moments like this, I hate to admit, where Jesse's charm and his humor actually kind of work. They're not completely working on me where I forget that his bad behavior, and I do still believe there's so much that we don't see from him, and he fucks with Michelle in a really manipulative way, but that made me laugh. And Sheena's also standing there for this confrontation, and you know, if you remember, Sheena was the one that confirmed that Jesse's new girlfriend was sleeping with a guy from Baywatch. And so Sheena's involved here, right? Like she has sort of has moved this along earlier in the season. And she's standing there for the confrontation, which tells me that she maybe was saying something. Maybe she had said something that we didn't see. Because they both sort of like walk away with like some defiance. If you remember, the girlfriend is threatening cease and desist on them for mentioning her on the show and for talking about her. I think that Sheena said something and they weren't allowed. Then they're not showing it. That's my theory. I think that, you know, Sheena brought up the girlfriend and the claims about her and her involvement or what have you. And like, you know, Jesse trying to bring Isabella to Newport or whatever. my opinion, just complete speculation, is that they probably cut something there. I did love also that Jesse gave Jason a heads up, because he does think that this ring, that is, you know, taking his ring off thing is total bullshit. He's like, you know, they're talking about you. And Jason's like, am I a racist Republican? Like, what are they saying? Like, what do they possibly do? And then when Jason and Janet sit down with Luke, Luke says that he heard the rumor from Jasmine, which is totally absolving Kristen and Zach, because Kristen was the one that brought it up. And she said that she heard it from Zach, who heard it from Jasmine. So it's interesting that Luke is taking a lot of the brunt here, and he's sort of rearranging how this information got out. And I completely believe Jason. You know, it's like, he's like, it's not an allegation that I'm cheating. It's an allegation that I try to cheat and fail. Like, he's like, this is ridiculous. Then Jasmine comes over and she says, like, I did hear it. And Jason's like, this is so rich. Like, I was just like defending Jasmine to Danny in this whole situation. And then here she goes repeating this rumor. And obviously Jasmine didn't know that he was defending her in that way. But like, the timing does suck for him. You know, I do love Kristen's like, I don't give a fuck energy, where she's like, I don't care if Jason and Janet are mad at me, because my real friends are Danny and Nia. Like, that is a good friend. You have to say that. Conversely, Janet is also correct that Kristen does this all the time, where it's sort of like, I don't know if you guys watched RuPaul's Drag Race. I watched a couple seasons there. It's sort of like Jada Essence Hall, where she was like, look over there. You know, like, it's like distracting from the real issue. And by Kristen bringing up this thing about Jason, she's completely distracting from the Danny drinking thing. And she knows that. She knows how this works. She's a pro. She knows what she's doing. And Janet obviously sees right through that. But Kristen doesn't give a fuck. So, you know, again, I think Janet and Kristen are good adversaries. I really do. They don't like each other. And it makes for good TV. I also believe Janet, when she says, like, I know where Jason is at all times, and I put an air tag on him when he's out of town. I very much believe that is on brand. So then Brittany ends this party with an announcement to the group that Jax has stuck her with a $14,000 a month mortgage because of this lease that he signed. And they're all outraged, and they're like, you have to meet with a lawyer. Like, rehab did nothing for him, and he did not think about how this would affect you and Cruz. And she's like, you're right. Like, this is basically like her saying, I'm filing for divorce. Like, I'm moving this along. This is done. And this the episode ends with Brittany and Jasmine meeting up with Schwartz. But Schwartz, of course, is like, oh, Jax has changed. He seems like really enlightened and whatever via text. And Brittany's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, of course Schwartz is convinced by Jax's like total smokescreen of pretending he's changed, right? The purpose of this scene is for Brittany to share that she just found out that Jax has not been paying their mortgage since May, and it's mid-August. So that is up to almost $100,000 in what they owe in their mortgage. And she's like, there is no Jax and Brittany anymore. Right after she says that, though, there's this montage of like happier days for Jax and Brittany. And we're like, let's not pretend this is like some fairy tale romance. Okay. Like, let's not give it that treatment. Like, Jax and Brittany, that was never going to last. Let's be fucking real. I feel bad for Cruz. I feel bad for Brittany, but like, let's not pretend that they had like all these happy times together. Like that, that they never had their drama. Like, come on, please. We also have the mid-season trailer, which I think it looks great. Like, of course, this show and cast is just going to continue to deliver. I am worried that like we're going to spend a little bit too much time on the Danny drinking thing. It's getting a little repetitive to me. So I hope that we kind of move on from that. We're getting Janet versus Nia, Janet versus everybody, honestly. Like, that's that's the common denominator, I would say. We have Zach confronting Brittany over like her loyalty to Janet, which I think is a really, I think that dynamic where Zach and Brittany are friends from college. Brittany and Janet are super close. Brittany and Kristen are super close. Brittany's kind of the nucleus, right? But Zach clearly has some resentment over Brittany like continuing to be friends with Janet and maybe believing her word over his sometimes. I think it's a really interesting dynamic. I really do. We have a Jesse and Aaron sit down about Michelle. I mean, the Hawaii trip overall with Luke's proposal to Kristen looks great. Like, I'm seated for the rest of the season of the Valley.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
All right, the after show. So I hadn't watched last week's after show either, so I'll talk a little bit about that. It does feel like, and I know how everybody feels about Janet, and I totally understand it, but it does feel like we're bending over backwards here to blame everything on her. You know what I mean? Like, for example, the girls' dinner where Nia shared her story about being homeless growing up. I'm so glad that Nia shared that. I think that it does explain a lot of how she is. I think it explains why she wants to be happy and try to be perfect all the time and just have, like, look on the bright side of life. Like, I think that is really admirable. I think it's amazing the way that she is built this amazing life for herself is really commendable. And I really like Nia. But I also think that by sharing that story in that moment, I do believe them in the after show where they kind of said, like, I think that she went into that dinner planning to share that. And it did deflect from the Janny drinking situation. They didn't really talk directly about that. And Jasmine was the first one to bring that up. Jasmine, right after Nia left that dinner, after she shared her story, she was like, wait, I'm not satisfied by that. Like, we didn't talk about it, like, whatever. But they somehow put it on Janet. And I think that was because Janet tried to connect, you know, Danny's drinking to her previously dating an addict. And I think that was a bit of a stretch. I think that that was not, I understand she was trying to relate, but that was not the move. I think that that makes Danny's issue seem way more serious than it is. I do think he has an issue, but I don't think that he's like an addict in the way that she's talking, a drug and alcohol addict, like she's trying to say, or she's trying to connect it to her experience. I'm glad that Nia didn't take that one lying down. But, you know, like in the after show, we got this previous footage of Nia escorting Danny out of multiple situations when he drinks too much. And again, I think two things can be true. I think that Nia can be doing what a good partner does by taking him out of a situation and handling it the way that she would like authentically handle it, like leaving the party early before it gets embarrassing. I totally understand that. And that is great. That is her being a good partner. But I also think that people can see it for what it is. Like, she is covering up for his bad behavior or potentially bad behavior if they were to overstay their welcome, because she clearly sees a pattern herself. Like she says, like, I do bring him out of parties and situations like that, and I would expect him to do the same for me. And I like that they are handling things authentically to them, but also, important caveat, this is also a reality show. And so you do have to handle situations a bit differently than you maybe normally would. And in this case, I would have loved, maybe not Nia like shit talking Danny in front of everybody and whatever, like he's a drunk. No, like she didn't need to do that. She could have acknowledged that he drank too much a little more clearly, I think, in a group, and that's not considered shit talking your husband. But what I also would have loved is just like an on-camera sit down between Nia and Danny about it, where they're not like laughing it off in like his actory way, where he's always laughing off the conversation. Like he always has the same reaction if you notice, and it's like, okay, dude, like relax. Like instead of them being like, oh my God, like they're trying to make an issue where there is none, have a conversation where it's like, why do you get kicked out of bars every time you drink? Why did you grab Jasmine's ass and tell her to go get daddy a drink? But again, I don't think that he's like some huge issue or has some huge addiction to alcohol, but I do think that like there's clearly a track record of him you know, because he doesn't drink that often. When he does, he goes too hard and he does things that he should regret and does regret. And like, I would love if they had that conversation, and that would do a lot of work for them. You know what I mean? And I just think that like they continue to dismiss Jasmine's experience with him when he oversteps. Like, not every guy acts that way when he's drunk. Sorry. Like, that's just not, that's not the case. And so they, I think the way they always laugh it off, I still think that that dismisses her experience of literally being groped by him. All right. So then in this week's after show, we have Jax doubling down on signing the lease. Jax is like, why don't you pay the bills? Because then but even though he's living in the house, he stopped paying the bills months before. And, you know, now the mortgage is $18,000 a month. And, you know, the boys are explaining it away that, you know, he did this because of his depression. And I'm like, if that was true, Jax would be showing some remorse in the after show, which he's not. He'll say one thing and then be like, but Brittany did this. He'd be like, I know what I did was wrong, but Brittany XYZ. And it's like, dude, like, that is not how this works. All right. Like, you're trying to pull the wool over all of our eyes. And so are some of the boys. And I don't fucking buy it. All right. Jax didn't pay his taxes for 6 years. And then their mortgage went from $8,000 to $18,000. That's all I need to hear, to be honest. And I love that Zach is calling it for what it is, which is a malicious act and direct retaliation. He's still bringing up that Brittany hooked up with his friend Julian. Like, stop bringing that up. We're past that. He's saying that all this bad behavior is just because of that. Like, no, nobody believes that. He says that he ended up writing a check for hundreds of thousands of dollars to make up for, you know, all the money he owed. Great. That's what you should do, because that's your responsibility. But he says it as if he should be like patted on the back and like treated as like a really good person because he paid what he was owed and didn't leave his estranged wife, who is the mother of his son, who looks after his son, with like all this debt. I will have to say, Brittany just did this like sponsored post with Kiehl's, I think, where she would, you know, revealed that she had hard launched her new man. And it was like a sponsored post. I think it was a new kind of thing. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that from reality star, a sponsored hard launch. And at first I rolled my eyes, but then after hearing this, I'm like, where she's paying all this fucking shit for him, like, and she's been left. I'm like, yeah, go get your coin. Like, I'm fully supportive of it. Brittany needs to get her money because of what the situation Jax has put her in. And, I'm all for it. And also, like, a perfect example of the way that Jax frames thing in a totally manipulative way is like, he's like, yeah, Brittany's like booking all these like, you know, rental mansions that she's hopping around between, like where she's not staying at the house. And she's like, no, I have to have a pool in the house that I rent because that is Cruz's happy place. Our autistic son feels most at home and at peace in a pool. So for his benefit, I want to find houses to rent that have pools. So like, that is just a totally different, Jax is just totally like not representing the truth. And he's just trying to make himself look better and her look irresponsible. And it's not going to work. Then we hear more about the, you know, Jasmine hearing the thing about the ring. And apparently, I thought this was really interesting. She's like, I heard this thing 3 years ago at a party from Jason's former friends. And, you know, then Janet reaches out to the friends and they deny bringing it up to Jasmine. So then the friends contact Jasmine and they're like, wait, why did you say that we said this? And Jasmine denied that and she blamed it on Janet somehow. And Janet's like, wait, why would I make up a rumor of my own husband not wearing his wedding ring? That makes no sense. I do believe the friends said it, to be honest, but it's a weird he said, she said situation with people that we don't know. And I think Zach is right. Like, it's probably not true. Like, I don't believe it, but also it is a very specific thing. So like, clearly something was said at some point, and I believe that his former friends told this to Jasmine. But I do think, on the flip side, apparently, and Luke admitted this, Luke added all these former friends of Jason on Instagram before Jason ever confronted Danny about his drinking, quote unquote, on behalf of Janet. So like, they're right that this was like a premeditated thing. Like, Luke says he was friending them on Instagram to verify the rumor, but like, they were planning on bringing this up and they were doing the work and adding people on Instagram to get it confirmed. Like, ooh, these people are messy. It's so sketchy. Oh my God. And they're like all doing it. I can't. Last thing I'll say, Lala explaining narcissism on the after show, I loved it. And it was honestly so helpful. All right, let's get into the Real Housewives of Atlanta this week. Not much to say, just two major things that I want to talk about. The Country Club Classic, Brit's event for her bare and naked clothing line, which is basically like a Skims knockoff. I tweeted this, but it's gonna maybe go down in history for all bad reasons. I mean, she gets there in full glam in her outfit with her husband, and it's completely not set up. She arrives right on time and nothing's set up. And it's like, well, maybe if like you really, really cared about this brand and like knew what it took to like start a business, I sound like Kim K, like maybe you would have been there a couple hours early to help set up and make sure it was running smoothly. Instead, she shows up in full glam in her outfit and she's like, why isn't everybody ready? This event was a total mess. Then just Kelly and Shamia show up first. Again, a very extravagant, like derby ready outfit for some reason to play golf. Then they go play golf in these outfits. And it's just like a very confusing thing. None of this has anything to do with her clothing line. And then they go back inside. Everybody else is there. They go into this, you know, nice room at this country club. And there's a, you know, there are tables set up with menus at the seats and place settings. And they all sit down. But then Britt's like, wait, why is it set up this way? Like, this is not a sit down lunch. This is a past hors d'oeuvre situation. And she's like embarrassed to go into the room. And then she lets them all sit down. They're all sitting down. But she's like, yeah, I only have enough food for our table to eat. So then the rest of the people, there are a lot of people at this party, they don't get to eat. And not only that, she gets up there and she introduces Baron Naked. And she has these PR boxes that she only hands to the cast. No other product for anybody else at the party. Then the cast opens up these boxes and it's just like one garment, like one like piece of shapewear sitting in there with no tissue paper, no anything else. And they're all like, okay. Again, nothing has anything to do with the brand. It's really confusing. It's a total mess. And I was kind of living for it. I was kind of laughing the whole time. I don't know. Like, it was kind of giving me Robin Dixon's Family Fun Day. But at least that was like on brand for what it was, which was like a field day for kids. Like, yeah, it was a lame setup and like embarrassing. But like, at least it sort of matched what it was. Like this, like none of this matched or lined up for me. And I was cracking up at the lunch. Drew versus Shamia was honestly hilarious. Drew's like, how old are we? And Shamia's like, in dog years or human years, bitch. Like it's very low stakes and I'm here for it. I really am. Because it feels like it's like a lot of people against Drew right now. And she's kind of in the hot seat in the group setting. And I'm kind of here for it. And then the other thing from this week's Real Housewives of Atlanta is obviously Phaedra Parks' return to the show. I'm sorry, but like this makes me really happy. Like that scene between her and Portia is just amazing. Like it reminded me of the good old days. It reminded me of when they were on the 15th anniversary special for Watch What Happens Live, which I was in the audience for, where they just like have this magnetism. Like they just have this magic together when they're together. And like, it's amazing TV. I'm sorry. Like you can argue with the wall. Phaedra and Portia, I'm really glad they're back on screen together, and it's gonna be a boost for this season. Even if Phaedra, like, again, doesn't give us much about her life, who knows how involved she'll get in the drama. There's only 5 or 6 episodes left. Like, if she just brings comedy and gives Portia somebody to play off of, which, you know, Portia was supposed to have Kenya to play off of, I'm here for it. Because I think the Portia has been, you know, floundering a little bit, and I think this is gonna help her, like, feel more empowered again. And, again, Phaedra just cracks me up. Like, she's meant to be on a show like this. And, you know, I do agree with a recent guest, I forget who said this, but like, it maybe would have been better to just bring Phaedra on for next season instead of, you know, awkwardly with 5 or 6 episodes left. Like, it definitely was a little bit clunky, but also, like, I'll take it. You know what I mean? Phaedra did address the incident, you know, where she made up the rumor about Candy trying to drug and sexually assault Portia when she was kicked off the show. And she addressed it in very vague terms, like she kind of let the footage do the talking for her. And I would have liked to see her pressed on that a little bit more, I will say. But also at the same time, I'm not super interested in drudging up the past from you know, 7 seasons ago, especially where the person at the center of it isn't around anymore. So like, I wasn't super annoyed about that, but I would have liked like just even like 1 or 2 more follow up questions about that to make her really, you know, address it in a bigger way and then just move on. But yeah, it is what it is. Like, they were never going to like harp on that with her big return. You know, and now they're going on this calf trip to Grenada, and it looks like it will be really fun. And I'm here for it. I'm here for the frickin' frack return, the reunion of frickin' frack. All right, last up is the Summer House Reunion Part 1. So we have this intro, which is basically the reunion trailer that we had already seen. But Sierra reminded us, I'd forgotten that her and Jesse had kissed. Obviously, it wasn't in like a super romantic way, but I'd forgotten that little detail already from last summer. You know, the bed set, it's inspired. The Snooze Fest inspired set, like, it's perfect. It really is. I loved Andy reminding West in the intro that he can speak, and that I think, you know, West, He clearly overcorrects, but I love that he says he's sort of in on the joke now where he's like, yeah, I have all these notes. And they basically just say, you know, talk. That made me laugh. And, you know, we also learned in this intro that Imrul actually is joining later. He was not on the set. He was not on stage when the reunion started, which is, it's interesting. It's like, I just don't know why they wouldn't have just made Imrul a friend, you know, like he is a main cast member. And so I think him getting this weird in-between treatment is kind of awkward. You know, I don't think he brought much to the show. I don't think he needs another season. I don't think that like, I don't think as social media thinks that the producers necessarily did him really dirty. Like there's like, if he had brought more, if he was giving more to the show, he would have been in it more. I think that them editing around him is really weird. And I think it's unnecessary. But like if they had left him in, he would have just been in the background anyway, because he clearly didn't give much plot or story to the show. And so like I feel two ways about it. Like it is weird and a little bit disrespectful and awkward. But at the same time, like they wouldn't have cut out substantial things if he had brought some of that to the group drama. You know what I mean? We start out with a Paige and Craig segment, and she's like, you know what? Like we actually have been having these conversations for a year. And we saw some of that on Southern Charm, but she reveals that they actually broke up for a weekend in February, which we did not know that before. They broke up just for a weekend. They got back together. So clearly, like, again, him being shocked by this, him being blindsided, as the weeks and months go on, like, it just becomes clearer that, like, the writing was on the wall for Paige and Craig. And she says, you know, I tried everything in my power not to have a breakup where it was team me or team him, but he wasn't going to let me go easy. And they did not discuss sort of like how the breakup would go publicly before they broke up. Like that was not something that was a talking point for them. And I believe Paige, like I believe that she went on Giggly Squad hoping to, you know, put a statement out to clear his name, because as she said, he was acting single during this trip around Christmas in Aspen. He was out at bars, taking pictures with girls, all these different things. I believe that she went on Giggly Squad hoping to like make him look better, not make it sound like she dumped him because she was over it. Or, you know, that to make it to, you know, show that he wasn't cheating on her by being single in Aspen. Like, I believe that was her intent. But yeah, I don't know. We'll get more Paige and Craig in the second part where we see in the preview, guys. Andy's like, are you intentionally not saying Craig's name? And she's like, yep, he will never hear me say his name again. Whew, I got the chills. But the last thing we did talk about with them was she doubled down on the fact that she doesn't think that he ever bought a ring. If he did buy a ring, if he bought a ring for Paige, as he says he returned one, I hope that on this coming season of Southern Charm, which is filming right now, I hope that they get him to show receipts about that. Because if he never shows receipts, then I also believe that he did not buy the ring. But if he shows them, then that puts that to bed. You know, because, you know, he didn't ask Paige's dad for permission. He said on Watch What Happens Live that he had returned the ring the day of the Southern Charm finale airing. And Craig's girlfriend was with him at that Watch What Happens Live taping, apparently. But she says, they went and returned my ring together. I don't think so, Andy. And she's like, I know his tells when he's lying. They also joke that Carl sold his ring for Lindsay to Craig. I'm dying. I cracked up. I did crack up at that. All right. Then we have this whole West and Sierra segment. And he's like, you know, he acknowledges that he underestimated the damage that the New York Times article did to Sierra. And he admits that he was like deflecting in articles. But he also is like, you know, but I got a lot of fucking shit for this. And like, it was really hard for me. And like, yeah, I believe that. But also like that was of your own doing. But he does a pretty good job here. He's like, I know why it hurt you. And I really, really apologize. Everything I said has done the opposite of what I wanted to do. And clearly, like, they cut a lot of what he had said, because they keep on saying, like, Wes was talking a lot, which, like, maybe he overcorrected, but I'd rather him overcorrect and talk a lot right now than shut down again and not say enough, because he had kept doing that. So I think that this shows that he really is trying to be better and explain himself and be more vocal. I really appreciated that. And he clearly had taken the time to think deeply about why this affected Sierra and articulate those thoughts. And he did the work, and I appreciate that. It showed a lot of potential, I think. It was interesting finding out that Wes had taken a 20-minute break at that first dinner where Sierra like reamed him out. He took a 20-minute break that we didn't see on the show. Like, he left the table, went upstairs. They're like, where is he? Like, and then he comes back and he's like, hey, how y'all doing? And everybody's like, yeah, we expected him then to say something, then to really understand. He like left to collect his thoughts. Nope. He still shut down. You know, Kyle's right. He's like, Wes not reacting made it worse. Like, Sierra wanted to see that he had thought about it and cared and what have you. And him not reacting showed the opposite. And Wes maintains that like having a conversation there would not have done much to help them. But I disagree. Like, that Sierra wanted that from him and he didn't give it to her. And Sierra had this great line where they tease a lot. It's like, if you can talk in the media, you can talk face to face. Amen. So then I think the best part of the reunion for me was when, you know, Sierra had alluded to some family drama that was happening around the time that her and West broke up that previous Christmas. And she starts to get teary-eyed when Andy asks her about it. And she's like, yeah, my mom got married again towards the end of our relationship. And she said, you know, it sent her in a tailspin because her mom is married several times now. And she was just like, I just don't have the capacity to get to know another person who like might not be in the picture in a couple of years. And she's like, I still don't speak to my dad. It's been really hard. And, you know, part of why I've been so emotional about this is that like West was there for me, but then he also wasn't there for me. He had like one foot out the door. And, you know, she's like, the holidays are a really hard time for me because, you know, my family is like not is broken up and I don't talk to my dad and her mom and her are clearly on rocky ground. And so she and West is like, I couldn't contact her because, you know, she went on this retreat where she's like, yeah, I turned off my phone. I wanted to forget what time of year it was. I wanted to forget my birthday, that it was the holidays, you know, so it was this sort of like, they were sort of ships passing in the night, it sounded like. And, you know, she's like, I think my mom deserves the world, but she always accepts what is sort of beneath her. And that also, I mean, all this makes so much sense. Like, I'm so glad we heard this from her. It was a really emotional, hard thing to hear. But like, she's like, that is why I am the way that I am. That's why I'm guarded. That's why I am cautious and move slowly because of how my mom is. Like, that is, hello, light bulb moment. Like, this segment was so necessary and so great. Kudos to her for opening up about this. I'm so happy we know this about her. It just explains a lot. And Wes was like, I just wasn't where you needed me to be that person for you. And so I think the respectful thing to do was to bow out, which is correct. Like, that is the right instinct. It's the way that he went about it that was incorrect. And sort of also the public facing nature of it too, that he mishandled. But he also admitted, like, he was like, that was the deepest relationship I've ever been in. Like, that to me just speaks to like their deep connection. And like, that is why I think that's why she can't have him as a friend, because like, then it's just like, it could be a slippery slope back into sort of reigniting her feelings for him. And again, he's not there. He's clearly in this sort of like party boy fucking around era, which he's totally entitled to, but I don't blame her for not wanting to be best friends with him again. You know what I mean? I also liked hearing from Imrul, where he arrives and he's like, you know, I thought I was pigeonholed a bit, but also like, I did lead the sex party. It's funny because like, I feel like when Lindsay asked Imrul like what his pickup line was and what his game is, he like starts talking, but then the whole cast like starts over like talking over him. It was kind of wild. Like, he never really got to explain that part of it. And I felt bad for him. Like, he was like, you know, like because of this orgy beast, you know, persona that was on the show, like I was uninvited from my nephew's birthday party, and like, you know, I felt isolated. Like, it was a sad moment to hear from him in this way. And Lexi does admit that they could have asked him more questions, but he was also like, I also could have done a better job of, you know, integrating myself with the cast and sort of getting more in there. So it sucks. Like, I think it sucks for him. I don't think that he's meant for reality TV. Like, he seems like a good person. And I don't think we got to know the full Imrul on this show, and that sucks. But at the same time, I also like, I don't know, I think people online are outraged over this, and I don't totally agree with that outrage, because I don't think that, like, I don't think he has the personality for reality TV. I don't. Like, I think that, like, it would have been nice to hear more of his story and hear more about him, but I don't think he needs another season personally. But I'm glad that he had this moment, that like, it was sort of more respectful and sensitive to his experience on the show. And it was really nice that they had this whole segment about him like that. And then we got into the Jesse and Lexi of it all, which, like, is anybody else exhausted? They're both doing interviews like every fucking week about it. And it's just like, again, making it seem like it's fucking Scandoval. That's a much bigger deal than it is. And yes, Jesse mishandled the situation. I think Lexi kind of mishandled the situation in some ways, Jesse more so. But like, him continuing to go out there and do interviews to clear his name, her continuing to go out there and do interviews to, like, you know, stoke the flames. I'm just sort of like, this isn't what we're trying to make it seem to be. It's not. Like, you guys had an 8-week situationship. You moved too fast. He kind of love bombed you. You took it and ran with it. I don't know. I just, like, it's a lot, and I'm losing interest in it, I will say. You know, they all believe that Jesse and Lexi had true feelings for one another. He says, you know, I was feeling like the potential for love. Like, I felt really strongly for her. I felt like I liked Lexi for Lexi. I hadn't been in love since high school. And I believe that. I believe all of that from him. I do. But Jesse's issue is that, like, one, he talks out of both sides of his mouth sometimes. And two, he doesn't know when to stop joking. Everything, like, becomes a joke to him. And when you're trying to be in a serious thing, or you're trying to whatever, like, especially when it's not always clear if you're trying to joke, you got to stop. You got to know when to be serious. That's part of growing up. Then we talk about Togate. You know, he's like, he admits he shouldn't have gone in. And Andy's asking the right questions. He's like, what if they had been fucking when you walked in? And I guess they all knew that they had finished, but they were naked when they went in there. And he calls it a 36-minute schmooze fest. I believe Imrul and Jesse that all he did was get his toe sucked. They were done having sex when he walked in there. It was inappropriate for him to be there and he shouldn't have gone in. And everybody's laughing about it. And Lexi's like sitting there very, you know, stern and serious about it. And Andy points that out, which, you know, she doesn't have to laugh about it. But I think that, you know, I guess it was kind of disrespectful for them to all be laughing at it so much in front of Lexi. But I think she really wants to believe that like he got a blowjob or whatever in that room. But like he didn't. He got his toe sucked. And he should not have lied about it. And then we got into the Jesse and Sierra and Lexi of it all. And Jesse finally admits that watching it back, he realizes that he crossed a line and he didn't realize how it came off. That's the through line with him, right? It's like he doesn't know how things come across. When he's joking, it actually can be taken seriously, or, you know, the joke crosses a line. This is where Sierra reminds people that they did peck on the lips last summer. And West also shoots down Jesse saying that he called dibs on Sierra last summer. He says maybe he meant it metaphorically, which I don't know what that means. I do know what that means. But that's another example from Jesse's best friend on the show of like Jesse using, you know, misleading wording about something, which I think is telling, to be honest. Like that adds credence to Jesse repeating things in a different way than they were actually said. You know, and Sierra's like, you know, I don't take his flirting seriously. And I love this quote. She says, if I wanted to fuck Jesse, I would have done it before the summer despite Wes to really throw him off his game. But I don't want to. Queen shit. But then there's another moment where Lexi kind of, I think, gets put in the hot seat where she's like, you know, it sucked seeing Paige and Amanda watch Jesse and Sierra flirt and say that they should date. And Paige is like, I actually never said that. And Lexi's like, well, Amanda did. And it's like, well, now she's trying to lump them all together. She's sort of like misrepresenting things too. And this is what I'm saying. I've been saying the past couple of weeks of like, I think both Jesse and Lexi have been misrepresenting things to benefit their own image and to further their, like, you know, their profile. And it's like, they're both doing it. They both are. And Paige is like, I actually told you not to date him. After the toe sucking thing, after the Sierra thing, at the snooze fest party, we all told you don't date him. And then what did Lexi do? She gets back with him the next week. And so I think that is why Paige and them were sort of like, girl, like we were in your corner. Like we were helping you out. We were telling you what you needed to hear. And we were there for you in a girl's girl way. But you listened to us for a week and then you went back on it. So like, I think Lexi kind of wants to have it both ways. And like, I do think that Lexi would benefit from having a little bit more of a sense of humor. She's taking everything extremely seriously, I think, because she wants this to be a huge scandal, a huge, you know, breakups are good business, right? But she would really benefit from like being able to laugh at some of this. You know, like she's sitting there very stone-faced and like, I understand her feelings were hurt. I understand Jesse fucked her over, but like, girl, you're not doing yourself any favors. And then we get into the no touching thing where Lexi's like, I never said don't touch Sierra. And by him saying that I said it, he's pitting us against each other, which I guess is true. But then Sierra's like to Jesse, don't sell this to me as a joke. Like, don't touch me, like LOLOL, when it's actually serious. Like that is a theme with Jesse, again, where he's joking all the time, but then it's actually a serious thing that people's real feelings are involved. Then this is where Sierra sort of launches into Lexi. And she's like, listen, Jesse may have pitted us against each other, but you also came after me in your press tour. And we see this clip of Lexi on page 6, where she's like, you know, they didn't come to my birthday party and then they both hung out with each other. And Sierra's like, why would I come to your birthday party if the last time I saw you told me you didn't trust me? And also Jesse's like, why would I come to your birthday party because of where we were in our situationship? Like we had just broken up. And Lexi's like, yeah, but I invited you and you guys hung out. And it's like, I don't know. I think I don't know why she thinks that they would have this allegiance to her. I guess it is disrespectful of them to hang out and post about it on the day of her birthday party. But also like neither of them were in a good place with her. So I don't understand what she was expecting. Yeah. So anyway, we'll get more Lexi and Jesse in part 2. We'll get a lot of Paige and Craig and we'll be getting some answers, I think, when it comes to Lindsay and Turner and all of that in part 2. So pretty solid first part of the reunion, I would say. Again, I really loved that Sierra segment in particular. But yeah, that is it for me today. Solo episode. Reminder, mailbag episode coming out on Tuesday. So submit your questions and please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.